Okay, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, in the audience and in TV land. This is the regular meeting, Thursday, February 4th, 2016, the City of Morro Bay's Harbor Advisory Board. Welcome. And we have a quorum. I think the only person that is not here is the Morro Bay Fishing Association seat. I believe everyone is fishing. So let's have a moment of silence. And Jean, could you lead us for the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, this is the time when we have announcements from the board here. Jean, I noticed that you have something quite interesting to share with us tonight.
Good evening. This is show and tell tonight. I've been inspecting moorings and for about 40 years, and I've seen things come and go. In the last 6 months, I've seen this sponge show up, and it's kind of a weird, tough kind of sponge there. And normally on the growth of the chains and the moorings, the top 5 or 6 or maybe 8 feet of the chain have mussels and little things growing on them. But over the last 6 months, this stuff has been showing up, and it encapsulates all of those mussels up on the top water column. And not only there, but also down on the very bottom, we see clumps of this stuff. And what it does is it covers over the tops of the mussels, and the mussels actually die. And I had a biologist look at it. There's a big, long Latin name, but I'm not going to pronounce that. But it's a sponge, and it's native to Baja California. It's a subtropical species. So it's here. That's all I can tell you.
So is there any impact, adverse or plus?
It seems to be getting on all the boat bottoms and things like that. And it's pretty tough. I mean, it's a pretty good sponge. So maybe there's some money in here. I don't know.
Is it edible?
I haven't tried it yet.
I noticed,
are there mussels underneath?
Yeah, there's some mussels underneath here buried.
I noticed that when I hauled my boat out this past weekend that it had partially occluded a through-hull intake.
Yes.
And because it adheres to, and so I would suggest people consider the through-hulls and also engine cooling.
It's not a quagga.
No, that's right. But our bay is alive, and it's changing all the time.
Thank you, Gene.
Thank you.
So, voters, beware. Lynn?
No, I have nothing.
I have nothing. Neil?
Nope.
Dana?
We have comments at the end, too.
Nope.
Yeah, just a little report on the movement of the Maritime Museum. Their kiosks and vessels that you see out there now, Coast Guard rollover boat, and the rescue sub, those are all going to be moving to their new locations about 60 feet away. So that should be happening really soon. Just wanted to update that.
What's the update on the facility, the building?
Chris Parker, our local architect, he's designed a building, and there's another gentleman, his name's Ross, I can't remember his last name, is doing the engineering on the building, and so that'll be coming, you know, down the pike, probably six, eight months down the road, I would think, because it's still got to go to the city. And then also on the moving of the boats, I didn't mention was Myers Drilling is actually going to do the crane work. You know, this is all volunteer work that everybody's supplying for the nonprofit Central Coast Maritime Museum.
Thank you, Dina. Ron?
There is a unique Epicurean opportunity this on Saturday afternoon, and I forgot to bring the sponges. No, I forgot. Maybe. Side dish. I forgot to bring the announcement, but I see somebody in the audience who might be able to help me. Lori?
What am I talking about? I was texting. I'm sorry.
The albacore tacos and how to order them?
I confess, I was texting my boss, okay? Not the one at home, the one I work for. Central Coast Women for Fisheries has our annual albacore enchilada sale this week from 1 to 5 at the community center. You pick up a tray of red with white, or red with flour, or green with corn tortillas. It's a tray of four for $10. Jeremiah O'Brien brought in the fish, as did Craig and Marlise on the preamble. I knew that this morning, okay? And Jeremiah's got the aguero. So it's local fish, and local fishwives are making it. And you can call me, because I don't have Jackie's phone number. 748.
Because you have to pre-order, is that not correct?
You have to pre-order. We'll have some available for walk-in. 748-2460, and we can order them.
Thank you.
And that's what I have. Thank you.
You know, I do have an announcement that I think is pertinent to the coast, is that we, when I say we, the February 10th, I believe, to the 12th, there is the Coastal Commission that's going to be meeting at the Inamora Bay. I just chatted with the people at AVP, and they are going to, because of the impact of the amount of people, have one of the sessions at the community center. So I'm sure you can go to the Coastal Commission website and find out the agenda. But there, you know, if anyone would ever want to go see a Coastal Commission meeting, this would be a good time, since it is going to be held in Morro Bay here.
At the
end, from February 10th to the 12th. Okay. Anything else? So the next thing here is public comment. I see some people in the audience. Is there anyone who'd like to have public comment? No? Lori?
I'm really not stalking you. My name is Lori French from Morro Bay. I'm a crab fisherman's wife, and I'm here to give you a quick update, maybe not so quick, if you have questions, update on the Dungeness crab closure right now. A little background, if you don't know, we were closed in mid-November. It's been an unprecedented move by the California Department of Public Health and California Department of Fish and Wildlife that caught us off guard, to say politely. I don't know the date. I think it was last month. The Fish and Wildlife opened Piedras Blancas South for commercial rock crab and sport rock crab. They also opened the Dungeness Sport. I'm emphasizing sport. Dungeness from Piedras Blancas South. The current numbers that we have going on from port to port, some just came out today. Bodega Bay, the action number to close is 30 parts per million. Human beings don't start getting sick until 300 parts per million, which is based off a test of 1987 from Prince Edward Island in Canada, where people ate contaminated mussels. The people that ate them, trying to say this nicely, were elderly and had pre-existing conditions, severe pre-existing conditions, two of which died. And those gentlemen that died, and I'm not making light of this at all, okay, I really am not, ate almost a pound of mussel meat at that time. That's what the study is based off, mussels versus crab. So that's what this whole closure is based on, and I can provide you the study if you're interested in it, just not right this second. Anyways, so the newest testings, some of them just came out this morning. Bodega Bay had two crab out of a sample of six. Most of these samples are six that tested at 34 parts per million. The state action level is 30 parts per million. They also had one area that tested close. Half Moon Bay is clean. Monterey is clean. Crescent City had two crab that tested at 35 parts per million. North Crescent City is clean. Trinidad, this came out this morning, had one crab that tested at 31 parts per million. And Trinidad South is clean. Crescent City has tested clean. Fort Bragg had three out of six crab that tested between 4.5 and 75 parts per million, or excuse me, 57 parts per million. Morro Bay has tested clean. Lucky Santa Barbara, they have almost three pages of testing. The rest of us have like little bits. Santa Barbara has remained clean for quite a while. So we're right on the bubble, please God, please, of opening, we hope. It takes another test. All the areas in the state have to test clean, and they have to test clean 2 weeks consecutively. So we're hoping for some decent weather so guys up north can get out and test, get the crab to test. There's one lab in the entire state that is taking the crab for testing. So that's been a little point of discontent, if you can imagine. We would like to stress at this time that there has been no illness reported from eating Dungeness crab, none whatsoever. This is a preemptive move by the state that just happened to take a whole industry out of business for a while. At this time, well, since the closure, there has been no relief for the commercial fishermen. Most commercial fishermen do not qualify for unemployment, which led Central Coast Women for Fisheries to set up a disaster fund on GoFundMe. To date, we've sent out about $5,500 in $100 gift cards to fishermen from Morro Bay up to Crescent City, just trying to alleviate some of the need. It's pretty drastic, and it's pretty scary because fishermen don't qualify for unemployment, and those that do have run out of unemployment. There is no backup. Food stamps say you can't go. I have a couple of gentlemen that I sent them to Salvation Army, and the Salvation Army told them to go find a job. And that has been suggested numerous times, that we sell our boats and go get a job. But we're trying to tell people that our jobs are our life. Not that we don't view fishing as a job. It is our life. The boats are part of the family. And if you had a bad year, would you shut your door? But if you had a bad year, more than likely there would be resources to back you up. That being said, the GoFundMe page is the Crabbers Emergency Relief Fund. Currently, we have a waiting list of people that have asked for money that we don't have money for right now. Checks can also be sent to the Central Coast Women for Fisheries at 785 Quintana Road, Box 106, Morro Bay. Do you need the zip code? 93442. Again, that's 785 Quintana Road, Box 106. Currently, Bodega Bay, Spud Point Marina has been, I would say, the crown jewel in this whole mess. The people of Bodega and Spud Point have gotten together. The Harbor Department started it. Eric, I'm looking at you. The Harbor Department started it. They started collecting for the crews. Bodega is a little bit different because it's more isolated, and many crews live on the boats. They started getting gift cards for their crews, so their crews had something to eat. Then they turned the laundry room in Bodega Bay, which is kind of a social room. There's a little library, and guys hang out there, sort of. They turned that into a food bank. Now they're planning a concert with Les Claypool, I think his name is. And they have also forgiven 2 months of slip rent for the crab fishermen. That would be January and February right now. I would like to suggest that Morro Bay follow suit. Other harbors that have forgiven slip rent or are in the process of it are San Francisco, Half Moon Bay, Fort Bragg. I don't know about Crescent City. I haven't talked to them yet. We are asking that Morro Bay consider giving the crabbers, I think there's only 5 or 6 in Morro Bay. I've also asked Avila, I sent Avila the same message, to forgive some slip rents for a couple months to give us a little bit of relief. And also an exemption for landings in 2005-2016. I know ourselves personally, our langosta, we didn't fish salmon this summer because it was a horrible salmon season. So the landings we usually have are not there. And then the plan was to take it and fish crab for a couple landings down here. And that hasn't happened, obviously. And we're not the only ones in this boat. If you have any questions, I can answer them. I know this is public talking, but...
Yeah, Dana?
Yeah, Lori, a couple of questions. When you were talking about this place has one crab that tested for that, is that like one out of so many?
One crab out of 6. The tests...
Okay.
The guys are getting 6 crab for their test samples. And some harbors have a couple different test sites.
Okay, another question is that the name of the relief fund is Crabber?
The Crabbers Emergency Relief Fund on GoFundMe. I'm being tacky and asking for checks to be sent to Central Coast Women for Fisheries so we don't have to pay the GoFundMe 8%. We're sidestepping it.
Okay, and one more question is... Your phone number for the enchiladas. I didn't quite get my pin out in time.
Let me tell you right now, the SBA has it. Fish and Game has it. Every reporter up and down the state has it. A lot of fishermen have it that I don't know have it. It's written on a bathroom wall someplace. It is 805-748-2460.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Lori. Neil?
Can I just make one... comment. So
yes,
this is more of a long-term possible solution in the future. It's not going to help with what's happening now, but my shellfish industry is regulated by the exact same lab, and I've dealt with this for 10 years, and they are significantly underfunded to the point where domoic acid testing is on a back burner to everything else this lab is specifically supposed to do on a day-to-day. And I would recommend possibly sport crab, commercial crab, as a group or multiple groups joining with the shellfish industry and lobbying for lab support. So as a side, maybe getting together with getting a larger group together, because as oyster farmers we've attempted to get more funding for them, and when they're pinched on funding, that's when they start making these pretty dramatic decisions.
And I understand that it would fall under the Dungeness Crab Task Force role, but I will text a couple guys or emails a couple guys tonight, because I know that is under consideration. And just a little side note, we did fish in the 80s under higher numbers than they closed us down for under an advisory, if that makes any difference. And the thing is like I said, I cannot stress enough, is nobody has become ill eating crab. It is totally safe to eat. Morro Bay High School, the baseball team, has a crab crab feed coming up. Please support them. The crab is coming from Oregon. Our crab is totally safe down here. We're just not open yet. But we need our buyers and our markets to realize that people will eat crab.
Lori, one last question.
Mm-hmm.
What does the season run from to? I mean, do you still, as so you say, pray to God next week, they might open it? How long do you have to crab for?
Okay, the way crabbing works, because it's a little different than some of the other fisheries, because there's a live market and then a frozen market, and then there's a China market. The season opens November 15th, south of, I want to see Fort Bragg, and then north of Fort Bragg, it opens December 1st. This is all based on crab quality also, but those are usually pretty good dates. And it goes until June 30th. But crabbers make, I would say, 80% of their season between Thanksgiving and New Year's for the holidays, because that's when it's burn and turn, and you're out there, you get the crab, you get him in, you turn around, and you get back out. I mean, you barely sleep, and that's the hot and heavy season. We've lost the Thanksgiving market, we've lost the Christmas market, we've lost the New Year's market, we've lost the Chinese New Year's market, we're missing the Super Bowl market. but the holiday period is, like I said, where we make 80% of our income for the year. Sure. You know, that's roughly, it differs from boat to boat. Most boats hang up their gear about February, March, as soon as the crabs start going into a molt. And there's some of us that are called scratchers, where we hang out to the very end till June. So if it did open up tomorrow, I don't know what would happen, because this has never happened before.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Lori.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay. Anyone else for public comment? Jeremiah, you have anything? Hearing no one else, we'll close public comment and get on to our consent calendar. A1, the approval of the minutes from the Harbor Advisory Board meeting held on January 7th, 2016. Everyone had a chance to look at that?
I would move for approval.
I have Dana here that would like to approve the minutes from January 7th. Do I hear a second?
I'll second that.
I have a first with Dana and a second from Neil. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? No. So the minutes are approved from the meeting held on January 7th, 2016. So the first public comment, public hearing is B1, is the Harbor Department status report, which is our lovely director, Eric.
Thank you and good evening. Welcome back for another month. So I'm going to touch on something you touched on earlier, Bill, because it's an evolving issue with the Coastal Commission. As you know, Coastal Commission's here next week. They've got a fairly controversial item up for consideration on Wednesday. They're expecting a very large turnout for that. They're considering moving to the community center because it's a larger venue. They're considering having overflow at the community center. So I guess the message to the public is keep your eye on the Coastal Commission's website and the City of Morro Bay, I imagine, because we're trying to help facilitate, get them where they need to be. So it may be at the community center, it may be in at Morro Bay. We don't know at this point. I believe for noticing purposes, they need to get the notice out pretty darn soon. So hopefully by tomorrow at the latest, we'll know. So with that, recent department activity. It's been a rather active year out in the surf line, as you know, and with storms. We've had a fair amount of rain and storms and a lot of surf up until last week when it kind of died off, but it's back up. We've had a lot of water rescues. As most of you know, we have a very popular surf break now inside the harbor called Widow Walls. Widow as in it can make widows. It's a little sandbar inside the North Jetty. Very popular. It's well protected from northwest wind. When the swell is 18 to 20 feet on the outside, it's 6 to 8 feet on the inside. Great for kids, great for longboarders, great when it's stormy and windy and blown out of the northwest, it can still be a good spot. The problem with it is now we've had so much scouring in there that it's a very fine line between sitting there in the lineup waiting for a wave to 6 to 8 knots of current sweeping by to pull you out the harbor entrance on an outgoing tide when the tide's going down to a minus. So we've had a number, probably at least a dozen over the last month or so, of folks that we've just snatched out of the jaws there that get pulled into that current and can't paddle against it. Either they're too young, too small, or too inexperienced, because it's a good short of this phenomena going on, it's normally a good place for people to learn to surf because it's well protected. But now it's gotten very dangerous, and I just want to caution the public that you need to be very cognizant of what's going on out there, especially when the tide's going out. Unfortunately, it's a low tide spot, so when the tide's going out to a negative in the afternoon is when it's best. But that also makes for the worst conditions. There's been times I've had been out there myself personally where a big swell is coming around the corner into the entrance, the ebb tide pushing against the swell coming in, and we've got 6 to 8 foot standing chop right there in the channel opposite the surf spot, and it gets dangerous for us to even try and get into. So just want to warn the public that it's a great place to surf, but it's also going to be a very dangerous place to surf, and people just need to spend a little time and be sure what the conditions are and what's going on before they go out. Related to that, and also in the status report at the end, there's a couple of photos with all these huge swells. Of course, it's very dramatic and beautiful to look at and observe, seeing these big waves come crashing in. As you can see from the photos in the staff report, a lot of people often get too close. Tide's coming in. They may stand in an area that's dry. The old saw about previously dry areas may be swept without notice is so true, and we've responded already to a number of folks getting knocked down out there. Fortunately, knock on wood, we haven't had anybody swept out to sea. It's been a number of years since that has happened, but that jetty is no place to be when the surf is big and spectacular. You need to be back further, really back in the flat area behind. Unfortunately, it's not a good viewing because you can't see the ocean as well. You can only see the spray coming up above the rocks, but if you're up above on the rocks and looking down at the ocean, you're probably too close. So just beware, folks, when you're out there. It's just not a good place to be, so people need to stay well back from that area. So over the last month or so, we've had 22 emergency responses with the Harbor Patrol and 110 calls for service. Like I said, a vast majority of those emergency responses have been at the harbor entrance, been surfing related. We had a fellow that decided it was a good idea to go inner tubing on the north side of the rock a few weeks ago. Got stuck in a recirculating current that was going around and around in circles. He claimed he didn't need to be rescued. We sent two swimmers in, a lifeguard and a fireman in to get him in, and had a very difficult time getting him out. So, again, just beware of your skills. Be cognizant of the conditions out there. Call the Harbor Department, call the Coast Guard to get an update on what conditions are, because we've got a pretty good idea what's going on. Just ample caution. Can't emphasize that enough. Recent city council activity, the January 12th council meeting, the council declared January 2016, which just passed, as Morro Bay Winter Bird Festival month. As you know, we have the word Bird Festival every January. I think it's on the Martin Luther King weekend. And that was held, and I think I actually got that in my past events coming up. Great event. Lots of folks came out for that. Also at the January 12th meeting, the council approved what we call a consent of landowner for the Central Coast Aquarium to submit their plans, their full plans, to the planning and building department, our community development department, for their proposal to rebuild the aquarium lease site. As you know, that lease expires in 2018, and we put out an RFP a couple of years ago, had no responses to it. Central Coast Aquarium was interested, but weren't prepared to submit any kind of proposal at that time. Well, now they have, and they've got a great proposal for a new building. Their proposal takes up that whole street end area down there, as well as goes out to the water. So I'm looking forward to seeing that proposal on through as that develops. The January 26th council meeting, council approved an authorization for the three-person delegation to Washington, D.C. for CMANC. That's the California Marine Affairs and Navigation Conference. Typically, that had been the mayor and harbor director. Last year, it was the mayor, harbor director, and city manager, and then the harbor director had to bow out because he got deathly ill with the flu one day before. So we're going again with three folks this year. Knock on wood again. Hopefully, I won't get sick. We also received a cable grant to fund that project as well, as we have in past years, so that's good news there. Typical stuff on the agenda, we're mainly going about dredging, Corps of Engineers. We had CMANC's winter conference down in L.A. a few weeks ago, and I spoke to the L.A. District Corps folks and asked one of the fellows pretty frankly what he thought our chances were for being funded for our full dredging this year. President's budget comes out on the 9th, and we may be in it. He said there's a pretty good chance we're in it. And then Corps' budget for last year, they got $40 million more in navigation maintenance projects than they requested, and the Corps' plan to spend that $40 million comes out on February 9th as well. So we've got two chances that we may get funded for the full Harbor Channel dredging as opposed just to the Aquina coming and doing the entrance. So we'll find that out hopefully on the 9th. So keep your fingers crossed. Also at the January 26th meeting, the Council withdrew a consent of landowner issued back in 2014 for the proposal to rebuild Lee Site 8788, which is commonly known where Off the Hook Restaurant is, owned by B&L Flash, that's Violet League. The Council further directed staff to work with a new lease development team, including the current leaseholders and one of their subtenants, to bring a new development proposal within 90 days back to them for consideration. So we'll be bringing that, working with those folks to get a proposal back to the Council within that 90 days, which is about the end of April. In addition, in January, there was two study sessions where the City Council considered its objectives, the 2016-17 objectives to the goals, the two-year adopted goals, which are already in place. There's 10 adopted goals. So the next study session, actually the second study, one study session was on the 12th, January 12th, the second was on the 26th. Council homed in on all those objectives and finalized them. We'll be working on, over the coming months, department heads will be working on the work plans. In other words, the things we are going to propose to implement those objectives, and then those will feed into the budget cycle. As the council works into the budget cycle in the coming months. And so if an objective is money-based, we'll come up with a work plan, and the work plan says we do this, and then we go to the council to see if they want to fund that. So all kind of a closed loop to get all the objectives done. As you know, at the first objective study session, the boatyard was not on the objectives list as it was in the Marine Services Facility. Wasn't on there. I think that was an inadvertent drop. We got it back on for the second study session for consideration, and it is on the list for continuation of that, so we'll be moving forward with that. So I talked about CMANC, our winter meeting. That was back in January 18th. Good meeting, lots of good interaction. Had a sea level rise study session on that, which was pretty interesting. Basic stance that all the ports and harbors are obviously taking. You know, coast-wide, the general reaction to sea level rise is what's commonly called managed retreat. You start moving infrastructure and things off the coast and doing things and not building critical infrastructure on the coast where it's going to be affected. With a harbor, that's hard to do. You can't move a harbor. It's pretty much where it is. So really, the harbor's just going to have to be raised up, really, to deal with it. So most of the guidance documentation talks about managed retreat. Can't do that in the harbor, so we're working on strategies to, harbors are all working on strategies to try and figure out how we're going to deal with sea level rise. One good thing, I guess, that comes from it may require less dredging because the water will be deeper, but means higher pilings, higher seawalls, whatnot to cope with that. Upcoming events, February 22nd. To the 24th, K38, and that's the company that does our jet ski rescue training, has for over a decade now. They're going to be back here in Morro Bay. We're sending two of our reserve officers, a couple of lifeguards, and some Morro Bay personnel to that. That's always great training. We also try and put our folks that are already qualified to do that back in it for some recurrent training. Shawn Eladio is the person that owns that company. She's great. And accommodating our folks and getting them involved and getting us some good updated training. And we've needed it a couple times already. Some days, unfortunately, have been so large to the point that we've made the conscious decision. And when we have days like that we won't even take a jet ski out. It's just too big. And there's been days where the Coast Guard's really been hampered in what they can do due to the size of it. They, as I reported, I think in last meeting or might have been meeting before, Coast Guard has implemented a safety zone at our harbor entrance. where they now do have the authority, the local station has the authority to close the harbor entrance and deny access for boats coming or going. Fortunately, they haven't had to enforce it in a truly hardline way where they had to threaten somebody. Everybody that's tried to come or go during those conditions when greeted by the Coast Guard and told they can't come or can't go, they've complied. They haven't had to get mean about it, which is good because it's for everybody's safety. If it's to that point, you really shouldn't be crossing the harbor entrance. And I'll go back to the safety message. You know, there's been a number of folks that have come with their little inflatable skiffs or paddle boards, stand-up paddle boards, and they want to come around the Target Rock area. On some of these days where the tide is going out to a negative or going to a really low in the afternoon, so much sand has been pulled off of the little beach at the south side of the rock and other areas in the channel and really pinched off that point where the inner groin jetty is, the real skinny point at the harbor mouth or at the harbor entrance inside. The current just gets ripping through. It's probably flowing 6, 7, 8 knots. And there's been times when folks, they kind of get caught up in those narrows and just trying to look at the harbor entrance from a distance, and it's just no place to be. So folks need to be aware of that. With that, the one attachment I attached to the staff report is Resolution 7915, which includes the City Council Work Plan Development. Resolution 7915 was passed back in December by the City Council to do a couple different things. One was to establish their calendar for 2016 with the study sessions and budget setting and advisory bodies and all the different things that are going on, joint meetings. But it was also to establish an advisory board work plan process, really defining a process by which the council wishes to route its goals and objectives and hopes, dreams, and desires to the different advisory bodies, the Public Works Advisory Body, Advisory Board, Harbor, and whatnot. And so this newly defined process starts with the council setting their goals and objectives, which they're doing every 2 years. We'll have 2-year goals and objectives. And then staff will develop the work plans, as I said. So we've gone through the goals. Objectives are looked at every year, goals every 2 years. New objectives were just established for 2016-2017. Out of those objectives, each department head will take the objectives that pertain to their department, come up with a work plan, you know, come up with A, B, C, D, E, the things they think they need to do to implement those plans. Those work plans, once finalized by the departments and through the city manager, will be routed to the advisory body. So we'll be seeing sometime this spring our work plans, the things we intend to do to implement the city council's goals and objectives, and the advisory bodies will have the input to the council. Council will consider all the staff input, public input, their own input, advisory body input, and establish and approve what the work plan process will be. And really, again, mostly that'll be implemented through the budget setting process, whereby if I have an objective that requires hiring a consultant to do a certain amount of work, if council really wants to implement that objective, then they're going to fund it through the budget process. And with that, I think that's the end of my report. I'll stop talking. Any questions?
Do we have any questions for Eric here? Ron?
Eric, in this evening's staff report, there's been significant emphasis on public safety as it relates to the harbor. I noticed some time ago that the management partners report that was published last year seems to suggest that the Morro Bay Harbor Patrol and the United States Coast Guard Station in Morro Bay are redundant as it relates to public safety. At least that's my interpretation of a sentence in the report. Could you help us understand, please, what public safety activities that the Coast Guard, in your experience, will involve themselves with inside the harbor, and what they would like to leave to the Morro Bay Harbor Patrol?
So any true boating emergency, they're going to respond to, whether that's inside the harbor or outside the harbor. It does vary depending on their staffing and their station chief and what their their own goals and objectives are. Generally, they'll leave stuff inside the harbor to us. If it's, unless it's a typical emergency inside the harbor is an overturned kayaker. Well, in a general sense, you wouldn't think somebody falling out of a kayak would be an emergency due to the amount of current flow and boats and docks in the harbor that people can get hung up in and the temperature of the water. We treat it as an urgent matter that needs attention pretty quickly. So we respond there on an emergency basis. Typically, those sorts of things, Coast Guard isn't going to respond to. They're going to respond to vessel fires, medical emergencies. They'll respond to surf rescues, obviously, inside and outside the harbor. They have a limit to how far in the surf they can get by the nature of their boats, where we have more ability to get inside the surf with our jet skis. So there's some redundancy, there's also a lot of complementary efforts that go on that where we can't operate, they can, and where they can't operate, we can. Inside the harbor. And then local knowledge is probably the biggest factor. They rotate out every 4 years, sometimes two or three, depending on promotions and whatnot. So they, unfortunately, and it's no fault of their own, they can never get the true local knowledge that we have of decades of being here. So oftentimes, and most times, in an emergency, out on the water, it's location, location, location. Where is it? If you've got a GPS location, great. If you've got a geographical name location, great for us because we know what they all are. But Coast Guard, they rely on us for those sorts of things. So, yes, there's redundancy, but I'd say there's more complementary things than redundant things.
Neil? I'm sorry, Dana?
Yeah, I have a couple. First, a comment just on what you were just talking about. The local knowledge, I mean, we're talking about officers in the Harbor Patrol that started out in junior guards, became lifeguards, and became Harbor Patrolmen. And like you said, the Coast Guard rotates out all the time. And maybe there's some redundancy, but I think there are two different things going on here. And I consider the Harbor Department very, very significant as far as the safety of our waters here. Back when you're talking about the in the staff report about the Central Coast Aquarium's lease, is Cal Poly part of that? I mean, I know they are through them, but is it a joint effort, or are they just not on the application, but they're heavily involved?
Yeah,
with their marine research.
Great question. And thanks for bringing it up. Yes, Cal Poly is heavily involved, heavily partnered in. Central Coast Aquarium nonprofit organization is the primary driver, but Cal Poly, through their marine sciences folks and Dean Wendt, are very heavily involved, as are their architecture folks. They've got architecture graduate and undergrad architecture students that are working on some of the design elements. So, yeah, they are very, very much involved in the plan. If it builds out as envisioned, they're building in some lab and classroom space that Cal Poly will be a part of and being able to use as well. And Cal Poly intends to, as you know, they've got a new boat that they just had built. It's mainly down at Port San Luis on the pier down there. I think they hoisted in and out of the water on the pier down there, but they'd like to leave it here in Morro Bay as well. So part of the project entails building a new dock for Cal Poly's boat as well.
Thank you. Neil?
So I have a unique opportunity to observe the Harbor Department being their neighbor, and I see the boat come and go throughout the day. And this number, 22 emergencies, Eric mentioned briefly, but that's a really significant number. That's a lot of rescues. And I personally surf out at Widow Walls, and on one day in particular, I was surfing at Widow Walls by myself, and I was right up alongside the jetty to where I could stand on some of the submerged boulders. And I was standing there, and I started counting the guys that were down at the middle of the beach, where typically parents take their children to learn how to surf, and beginners start surfing before they move out towards the jetty. And I counted, I was right in the process of counting 22 people, so I kind of stood up on the rock. And as I counted the 22nd person, I noticed that the whole pack was drifting out of the bay, and I watched them go right by me, and they're all sitting on their boards, just docile, not worried, until I screamed, "Hey, you're all getting sucked out of the bay, start swimming." And each one of them got down and started swimming on their board and started paddling towards me, and I started trying to instruct them. And on that particular evening, the harbor department had already come out and done kind of a round, and it looked like they had kind of lingered off over by the finger jetty, probably because normally they would have gone in, but it seemed like there were so many people out there, they knew something was going to happen, maybe, I don't know. But just as those people were getting sucked out, the harbor department rushed over, and I counted either five or six bodies that they rescued, live people, not bodies, but surfers, that they had rescued all in one sitting as those guys were getting sucked out of the bay. All the other swimmers or surfers were able to get in, minus those five or six that needed to be rescued. So, yes, we have a Coast Guard, but it's also a matter of being in the right place at the right time. And the harbor department was out on patrol, and they acted immediately. And if the size of that surf, if somebody had waited for a phone call to go through and hadn't been there, then it could have been a much different situation with those people once they're outside of the bay. So,
and we've taken to really on these outgoing tide days, stationing a boat out there the whole time, just because unless we can. There's been a couple days where we can't. We had to be way inside just, and then go out if we had to, and we did on a couple occasions. Where Coast Guard tends to be more reactive. They're waiting for the emergency.
Right.
We're more trying to be more like lifeguards and preventing the emergency, so we're out there a lot just waiting and standing by. And like you did, Neil, and I appreciate that, I think, you know, guiding people and, hey, you know, you're starting to get a little far away. And we've had people that, I've had one guy that I approached that at first was pretty combative and played the "I've lived here for 40 years" card and I know what I'm doing, leave me alone, until in the time it took him to try and argue that with me, we drifted 3/4 of the way towards the harbor entrance, and then he realized he had 20-foot waves facing him in about the next 10 seconds and decided to jump on the boat. It's, you know, the currents are just, it's amazing how much is flowing out there now and how quickly and how much has changed. It's not the docile little widow walls area that it used to be. It's really changed, so people need to be really wary of what's going on.
Yeah, I've searched it since 2004, and it's different than I've ever seen it. The current is stronger than ever, and I grew up swimming and playing water polo my whole life. I consider myself a strong swimmer, and I can't keep up with it, so a lot of times we just don't go out there. But the other issue is the kayaker. I also witnessed the kayak rescue was a slightly elderly man who had been in the water and was hypothermic. And again, even though the Coast Guard was involved in it, it was your boat that brought him back in. So I applaud the harbor department for their work. And that's it.
One question, Eric, on the 22 emergency responses. How does that compare to like a normal January? I'm just curiosity. I mean, like last year, for instance.
I'm just thinking about monthly reports I've done over the years and kind of collating our statistics. I'm probably going to say, I don't know, somewhere between 5 to 10 per month is pretty typical, even in the wintertime. It varies. You know, summer's more kayakers and canoeists and not big surf-oriented. Winter obviously gets to be surf-oriented. But, yeah, it's probably at least double.
Okay. Thank you. Lynn?
A question on the closure of the entrance by the Coast Guard when they do it. I know that they do announce that on NOAA weather, but are there any other ways that the public can find out when that closure exists and when it's lifted?
So the Coast Guard announces it over the radio, over Marine 16. As you know, we've got our hazardous bar warning system where we call the landings. We're in the process of evaluating that and trying to come up with a better way with internet technology and Facebook and everything else. Coast Guard, I won't swear to it, but I would probably guess, and if they don't, I'll suggest it to them. They have a pretty active Facebook page where they're putting public safety and rescue and other things on there. Coast Guard's Facebook page would be a good place to look. I don't know if they're doing Twitter tweets or not, but we're looking at other options to come up with a more automated or electronic way or a texting or some sort of website, web-based way to get the word out better on that.
I think it would be really useful to voters to know or to be able to call and say, is it closed?
Yeah. And the hazardous park.
Other than having to bother the Harbor Department or the Coast Guard.
Which is fine. I mean, call us, too, on the radio or phone. So I want to make a distinction. I'm glad you brought that up. So there's the existing warning, which still has been the warning for decades now, is the hazardous barn warning, hazardous harbor entrance, meaning it is hazardous. The Coast Guard won't always close it because it's hazardous.
Right.
It's, and in northern ports, they'll close it based on vessel size and type. So you've got a 26-foot boat, and it may not be good. It's closed for you, but you've got a 60-foot boat. You're okay to go. So we don't have that here. The Coast Guard, local Coast Guard, it's a judgment call on their part. But it still can be hazardous, but not closed. So the public should be aware of that, that don't think that if it's the Coast Guard doesn't have it closed, there's not a problem, because there can be. You still got to be worried about the hazardous bar warning. As you know, and if the Coast Guard is going to close it, obviously it's hazardous, so the hazardous bar warning is going to be up as well. On top of the Coast Guard shed on the end of the North T Pier are those orange rotating strobe lights with the rough bar sign. That's the sign to mariners, you know, going back and forth. If you see those orange flashing signs, those strobe light signs going, the bar's hazardous and may be closed, and that's the time to stop and either turn around and call on the radio or rethink your strategy, or at least find out and know what's going on.
Thank you.
Gene?
Oh, I'd like to add my support to our local harbor department. Beyond the safety issue, they're doing hands-on, day-to-day. Their feet get wet. Their hands are getting wet. They're in the water all day long, back and forth patrolling the harbor department, the harbor itself. And that's not something you're just going to pick up every once in a while. So I really appreciate our men and women in the field.
Thank you. I will ditto that, too. Yeah, Ron?
I'd like to pile back on the redundancy issue just for a second. Anybody who thinks to themselves, well, we have a Coast Guard station here and we have a Harbor Patrol here, and maybe we could just cut back on the Harbor Patrol and let the Coast Guard take care of it because that's federal money. I would invite anybody whose thoughts go down that path to imagine themselves in the water and needing to get out of the water and not able to get themselves out of the water, and then go down to the dock in front of the Harbor Patrol, in front of the Harbor Office, and look at the two Coast Guard boats, and then look at our patrol boats, and try to figure out how you're going to get out of the water and onto the deck of those vessels. The freeboard, which is the amount of distance, vertical distance between the water and the deck on the Coast Guard boats, is several feet. The Harbor Patrol boats are purpose-built, designed and built to be able to roll you right into the deck. And if there's any lingering doubts in my mind as I'm wondering about this, on YouTube you can see the 42s, our Coast Guard boats. You can watch a water rescue on YouTube. It's a process. It ain't easy.
Thank you, Ron. Okay. So with that, we're going to wrap up the staff report. And we want to go to C1, which would be update from the Marine Services Facility Boatyard Ad Hoc Committee on committee's recent activities. Dana?
Thank you, Bill. The Ad Hoc Committee for the Marine Services Facility Boatyard, we had like a little subcommittee meeting and just came up with some ideas of where we are and where we're going. So I went ahead and actually gave Alan my notes, and then he comprised something, and then I edited it, and then kind of sent it out, and Ron kind of added a little bit to it, and came up with a
annual report for last year and a critical path for 2016. So I'm just going to read it. It starts out January through March last year. The ad hoc committee reviews Lisa Weiss Corporation's draft Morro Bay Boatyard and Haul Out Facility Market Demand Analysis Report and provides extensive comments. April, LWC, we'll call them Lisa Weiss, what's called LWC, releases its final draft of this same report, the demand analysis, and it was presented to the Harbor Advisory Board at a special meeting on April 22nd. The board voted to direct the Marine Facility Ad Hoc Committee to develop the site criteria for the project to move ahead. In June, the Ad Hoc Committee provided the Harbor Advisory Board with its site criteria for the proposed project and recommends that the board recommend that the City Council apply those site criteria in the very near future to identifying and committing planning activities to a boatyard site, additionally recommending that the site be the triangle lot recently acquired by the city from Dynegy. The Harbor Advisory Board voted to make the recommendation. In July, Harbor Director Eric Endersby notifies the Harbor Advisory Board and the Ad Hoc Committee that the Council has approved funds and directed staff to hire a consultant to determine if there is space for a boatyard, maritime museum, and parking in the triangle lot. September, the Harbor Director notifies the Harbor Advisory Board that RRM Design Group has been selected to design a concept for the triangle lot, parking lot, and related areas to include maritime museum, boatyard facility, and parking. November 13th, Ad Hoc Committee and other city staff attend a design workshop at RRM Design, resulting in two concepts for the triangle lot and surrounding area. December, the Ad Hoc Committee recommends option A from the RRM Design as the best alternative for incorporating a boatyard haul-out marine facility in the development of the triangle lot. The Harbor Advisor Boat votes to recommend the concept plan option A to City Council. So that's just kind of the rundown of last year. And then what we're looking at, our critical path for 2016 this year, which we've already into here, the second month. 2016 finds us closer to a boatyard haul-out marine facility compared to 3 years ago when the ad hoc committee was formed. However, as of February 4th, today, to the Harbor Advisory Board meeting, there is yet no feedback from the City Council regarding the City's acceptance of the recommended RRM plan option A for the triangle lot. Should the City decide to commit to the triangle lot for possible development as part of a marine facility, excuse me, the next step is a financial feasibility study for the project. It seems desirable that RRM be hired to flesh out the concept plan to the point where cost could be determined. A consultant would be hired to evaluate construction and other capital costs, financing and operating costs, and to identify alternate sources of funding. The ad hoc committee would like to work with the consultant and determine the various compromises that will inevitably need to be made along the way, and to help the consultant determine which aspects of the project are germane to the marine facility and which costs are included in existing city plans. The Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization applied for a Central Coast cable liaison, I believe is what it is, grant for up to $15,000 on an equal share basis with the city for a financial feasibility study, contingent on the city deciding to proceed with the process. However, we just found out that this grant was denied this time, but the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen can still claim they were committed enough to the project to apply for the grant and risk losing funding in some other areas, such as an essential repair of the ice machine. As the site appears to the ad hoc committee as the only possible site left for adequate marine facility in Morro Bay, if the city fails to act on the recommendation regarding RRM option A, then the ad hoc
Committee feels a vital element of needed infrastructure for the future of our working waterfront and the entire Morro Bay boating community will be lost. So that is our report.
Okay. Any discussion? So, Dana, what would you like to have us do anything in the way of a motion? Would you want to put a motion together so that maybe we can have our harbor director present it to City Council?
Yes, I would.
Ron?
There are two tracks for an advisory body to put something that concerns the advisory body before the City Council. One of those tracks is through a recommended motion, which then goes to staff, and staff forwards it on to the city manager. The second track, if there is an issue of special interest to the advisory body, they can make a direct written request to the City Council that the City Council put that item on a City Council agenda for consideration. So I just want to point out that in this matter, which has been going on for a long time and is important to many people, that there are two possible tracks, and one is a direct written request. The recommendation was already made.
Well, go ahead.
The recommendation was made. That is correct. But I think that in the lieu of us continuing, we need to have this feasibility study, which I do not think was recommended to the City Council. So I would like to entertain Dana of maybe coming up with that motion.
Okay, well, I do have a motion that I can make concerning that. I think maybe our liaison could speak on behalf of the City Council if there's anything coming down the pike, or I can just go ahead and make my motion.
Oh,
okay. Give you a chance. Well, I move that the Morro Bay Harbor...
Dana?
Oh, okay.
Matt?
Go ahead. Sorry.
Hello, Matt Makowitzki, City Council. I think in terms of talking about this, I think Dana, in terms of the motion, in terms of letting the harbor director know, I mean, and Ron, you're absolutely correct in terms of making that motion, letting staff, harbor director know to bring it to City Council, that's the protocol. Also, as has been done, Bill and Dana, coming to City Council and letting know the harbor board's feelings, direction, given the work that you've done for that, that's part and parcel of the process. I do believe in terms of the goals and objectives that Eric was talking about, in terms of in looking in the larger sense, the macro sense of the Embarcadero plan, dealing with the Triangle parking lot, with the Maritime Museum parking and the boatyard, looking at how this plan is going to go ahead, especially as Eric is talking from staff and City Council, looking at the goals and objectives as that harbor, as the boatyard. So I guess the short answer is, as an entity of one action to do the boatyard, it won't happen by itself. In the larger sense, in the collective sense of that Embarcadero plan of what's going on developmentally wise with the Embarcadero, i.e. parking, et cetera, looking at the downtown plan, looking how it's going to be coming down, the downtown plan, is it going to marry up with the Embarcadero plan? I'm with you. I really believe, as a standalone item, the boatyard is incredibly important for a working waterfront. Absolutely agree with you. But I don't think that issue stands alone in terms of what's going on with the Embarcadero plan and the downtown plan. I bring up the idea of the old Breakers de Destacios building with the parking down below and the parking below on above on Market Street. thinking in the larger sense of how to serve the Embarcadero, the business interest, and the boating interest on the Embarcadero. So I think, in one sense, I don't want to urge caution. I really want the harbor to board. I really agree with you pushing this forward and saying, and staying adamant with it and saying, this is very key, not just to the people on your board, but to having a working waterfront and keeping it, keep bringing it. And as far as Eric and staff is what he's saying, this is on the agenda. As a council person, it's still very much on my agenda, and I think it's very important for working waterfront. So I'm sorry to take so much of your time. There's no easy, short answer except to keep pushing it.
Well, one of the things that, you know, I was at the goals and objective session, and I brought up the marine service facility. And the city manager stated, you know, in a sense that we need to have a feasibility study, period. So what I would like to have the Harbor Advisory Board is try to get onto the city council agenda as our next step in the macro plan of the Embarcadero. Is it feasible to build it and operate it? If we wait until the full macro study is already done, you know, I think we need that piece of the puzzle.
I agree with you, Bill. And in terms of that being, you, how would you say, project ready?
That's all.
Okay. So speaking with you right now, I totally agree with you.
Okay. So that's what I would like to see us do today, Dana. So you make a motion. We have Eric bring it to the city council and try to get it on the agenda that we issue an RFP to do a feasibility study on the building and operating of the Marine Service facility in the Triangle Lot.
Is that a motion? I have one right here.
Well, I would like to see you make one.
Okay, just before you do, I'd like to make a comment. I went to the goals and objectives also, and I brought that up right off the bat. I was there at the 4 o'clock time slot, and I looked and I said, I don't see this on your goals and objectives. I know it's been on there for some years, and I, having to say that and then go on about where we've gone and where we're, you know, what we've done and speak my piece there, I just find it kind of interesting that we are an advisory board chosen, appointed by the city council, and yet we have to keep coming back and keep coming back saying the same thing over and over. And it's just kind of like they're not hearing it. And then we have staff kind of going another way. I mean, the city manager as in staff, not the harbor director. And I just see some conflicts in our city government going on here, and that's anyways, I'll just go ahead and make my motion here. I move that the Morro Bay Harbor Advisory Board recommend to the city council to employ a consultant for a feasibility study of the previously recommended marine services facility design option A by RRM in a timely manner.
Second. I have a motion by Dana, a second by Ron. Do I hear any discussion? Gene?
I just want to make sure that we're talking about the plan A that was presented before.
Correct. Okay. Lynn?
Yeah, a question to Ron. Were you suggesting earlier that it might be a better tack to go directly to the city council rather than making a motion that goes through the staff?
No, in this case, I didn't know, and I just wanted to share with the board, in case they weren't already aware or had forgotten, that the two tracks existed. Given the input from Councilman Makowetski, I think that the motion is entirely appropriate.
Thank you.
Okay. Neil?
No.
I have nothing. I made my point clear. Dana, anything else? Ron? Okay, hearing no discussion, all in favor of this motion, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Nay.
Jane? So noted. We have five ayes and one nay. So motion carries. Thank you very much, Dana. C2 is the update from the Finance and Budget Ad Hoc Committee on committee's recent activities. Neil?
Thank you, Bill. So the Ad Hoc Committee, comprising of me, Bill, and Ron, we met with Eric on Tuesday, and we got an update as to the current status of the budget. Right now, they've just completed the mid-year review, and Eric shared with us his findings, and I'm going to leave out a lot of the figures that we went over just in general summary for now. The revenues actually look slightly better than previous years. A lot of the revenue doesn't come in until the end of the year due to the leases having to pay their gross sales at the end of the year. But right now, what can be accounted for in this increase is not something that should be expected to continue on an annual basis due to the weather, the large surf, and other conditions like our public comment period. We discussed the crab closure. A lot of boats have remained tied up, and slippage fees have increased, and mooring fees. That's right, Eric, in general. And so this currently that increase should be expected for this year, possibly this year only. The Ad Hoc Committee continues to be a sounding board in the budget process, acting at the request of the Harbor Department as they feel it is appropriate. Eric provided with us the City Council's budget schedule over the next few months, and I'll just read off what's been summarized here. On March 22nd, a budget forecast study session will occur, and this will be a review of the general fund and hopefully also the harbor fund. Last year, this was the general fund only. On April 26th, the advisory board guidance study session will occur, and this is new. This is new and comes from the flow sheet that we discussed in Eric's staff report that was part of the resolution. And essentially taking the advisory body's input on staff work plans developed from the adopted goals and objectives. On May 24th, a budget study session will occur, and this will be to start lining up goals and objectives with budget prioritizing of the work plan elements. On May 31st, another budget study session. This will be round two of the above session on May 24th. And then the final budget to council for approval either the first or second meeting in June. And so we will be available to support the Harbor Department at any and all of these dates if they so choose. And we thank Eric for his time going over all this information with us. And that's it for now, unless Eric has something to add to it.
Eric, do you have anything?
Probably just, and you touched on it a little bit, Neil. So we're at completing our mid-year budget review. The mid-year is obviously the December 31st, where we look at revenues versus expenditures and make any necessary fine-tuning adjustments. The City Council is set to approve our mid-year budget request. So all us department heads adjust our expenditures and revenues. Not all have revenues. We probably have the most revenues out of anybody except for community development. But so we'll be going to City Council next Tuesday on the 9th, I believe, February 9th, for the mid-year adjustments. So if anybody wants to see what our mid-year adjustments are, we did increase our revenues up based on partly what Neil said. Some of our slip and T-pier fees are up, partly because we had a slight fee increase this last spring, this last budget cycle, but also because there's just more boats in town. A little bit because of the Dungeness crab season, but more so because of the weather, and boats just haven't been going out. And so that increases our fees because they're not on a sublease lower rate. They're on their full rate. So that increases our fees. Also, a little bit of our lease fees have gone up from our estimates, from what we originally estimated. So we've got some increase in revenues, and we're matching that with some expenditure adjustments as well. So you can look on the city's website. I believe it's posted. The agenda is posted now for next week, so you can see what our mid-year adjustments are as well as the rest of the city.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Any comments on Neil's report? Ron?
Just one minor clarification for the folks, as you say, Bill, out in TV land. When Neil was talking about the year, you mentioned, used the word year several times. That's the fiscal, the city's fiscal year, which runs from June, if you will, to June, which is why Eric said what he did about the mid-year is cuts off in December.
And the only other comment is, Eric, is these figures going to be available on the website for the public to view? Or is this still, I mean, is this public record? I'm just curious. If someone wants to look at the harbor budget revised projections.
I don't think the full projections, expense, and revenues are in the staff report for next week. It's just a summary of the specific line items we're requesting to be changed. So you can look at that. So it won't give it an overall sense, but you can look at, like, for instance, I'm requesting my North T Pier go from, you know, increased by, I think, by $8,000 in total revenue. So those individual things you'd be able to pull out of it, yes.
Thank you. Okay, hearing no other comments here, we'll just go down to C3, update from the Eelgrass Ad Hoc Committee on committee's recent activities. Lynn?
Thank you. This committee is another one for educational purposes so that we can understand the importance of eelgrass, what's happening to eelgrass in the bay, and it consists of Neil and Jean and myself. We did have one meeting with Jen Nix of the NEP, the National Estuary Program, who is very well informed, perhaps an expert on eelgrass. We are currently reviewing a report that she gave us about eelgrass in the bay, and we will be going into further depth as we develop more questions and answers for this.
Thank you. Any questions for Lynn? Seeing none, thank you very much, Lynn. C4, update from the Marine Sanctuaries Ad Hoc Committee on committee's recent activities. Ron? And consideration of Ad Hoc Committee's written report that was in your agenda.
As we have previously informed the public, the committee was formed late in 2015 for the purposes of educating itself, and hence the Harbor Advisory Board that it serves, and hence the City Council that's served by the Harbor Advisory Board, about the National Marine Sanctuaries Act as amended by Congress in 2000, and what that might mean for a marine sanctuary, any marine sanctuary, to be established off the coast of Morro Bay. The three committee members initially have divided our work into three different macro areas of interest. Bill is working on economic aspects. Alan Aldward is working on regulatory aspects, and I'm working on what we call local control aspects. Local control might be city, county, so it's not just Morro Bay, because there are more government entities potentially impacted by a marine sanctuary than just Morro Bay. So, Bill, would you like to summarize what you have done since the last report regarding the economic aspects?
I put down, and I actually went to the NOAA site. NOAA has some slick slides on the economic activities in certain sanctuaries and in sanctuaries in general. What I have, and I, for instance, Based on a three-year average from 2010 to 2012, the total economic impact from recreational fishing in California, national marine sanctuaries, the so-called ripple effect, totaled $213.1 million. So you say to yourself that as I read these, and we are an advocacy and educational group, and these figures I really couldn't pull where they got the data and the net gain from that data from when it wasn't a sanctuary. So it's something that I'm having a hard time grasping and trying to figure out whether or not this economic activity would not be here if it wasn't a marine sanctuary. And that's my real dilemma. There's no net gain. So the one thing that I think there is a net gain is when Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary provides opportunities for approximately 25 marine science facilities, and these facilities employed almost 2,000 people in 2004 with a combined budget of over $200 million. Now, that's a pretty big economic gain. I just need to find the data that backs that up. Is that part of the aquarium? And if that's the case, you know, that's a different animal. I mean, that's backed by Packard money. And so I'm not so sure that it would not also be there without a marine sanctuary. And that's the thing that's hard to determine. The one report that I did look at, which was the University of Michigan, and NOAA stated that in their data and their documentation that 1,704 jobs were gained in Thunder Bay, which is a marine sanctuary in Lake Huron. I believe it's Lake Huron. And I actually read a good portion of the University of Michigan report, and to be very honest with you, the business community stated in their report, because the report was done by surveyors, that there was no net gain in employment because of the sanctuary. Now, the business community likes the idea of a sanctuary, but they need to take that sanctuary designation and actually utilize it for increased employment, but that has not been done yet. So I think it's a work in progress, and I need to do a little bit more work, and I do apologize if the actual figures are a little bit skewed, but I'm just not sure exactly the net gain, whether it was a sanctuary or not a sanctuary, and whether or not there was a lot of economic activity because of just the designation. So that's my report.
Bill, is it the case that economic aspects extend beyond the possible flow of federal money into a sanctuary area? I don't mean into the sanctuary, but where a sanctuary lives. Wouldn't there also be economic aspects relating to, as you touched on already, business, in our case, agriculture, fishing, and a variety of other tourism, for that matter, and a variety of other economic potential aspects?
Well, I think there is a ripple effect, but then again, the key question is, would that affect, do you have to have a marine sanctuary designation to actually generate the economic activity? There is fishing allowed in marine sanctuaries, but there's fishing allowed in areas that are not marine sanctuaries. And so I'm having a hard time pulling that data to really give the public an informed view of the net economic activity. Agricultural, as you stated, in the NOAA presentation that the director gave us, They utilize the terminology best management practices for the agricultural community because agricultural runoff and activities impact the sanctuary. They utilize no fines, no, you know, actual, but I'm sure that there was some money that was generated to have those practices. So there's probably a negative economic impact. I just need to find that data and try to pull that, and that's my job. And so it's a work in progress.
And I think that that's true of the other two macro aspects as well, and it's why the committee feels so strongly that there need to be additional public information forums organized relative to a hypothetical marine sanctuary off the coast of Morro Bay. And those forums would invite players who have lived with a sanctuary from other areas of the California coast that are involved in agriculture and tourism and real estate and fishing. And hopefully they would be able to share with the citizens of Morro Bay and the city of Morro Bay what their experiences are. I mean, good, bad, or indifferent, it doesn't make any difference as long as it's not advocacy and it's not biased and it's factual. Alan is not here this evening, and he's done quite a lot of work.
Sure. I just had a question as far as Bill's report on the economic aspects. Now, this is when you're looking at this. This is just here, the economics here, or when they talk about 2,000 jobs and $213 million.
It's in Monterey.
Okay, but that's not okay. So it's not jobs in Washington that are created through this, or anything else.
Well, that's the price of the pudding. I haven't been able to get the details of
no
the
way
generalization.
To extract that.
Well, I need to try to figure that out.
Okay, just curious.
Gene?
Have you seen any data that would show of an area that becomes a federally governed area any detriment to the economy? Some businesses that can't proceed ahead because of federal regulations? Have you seen any data along those lines?
No, I have not.
That doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
That's correct. Neil?
The shellfish industry in Tomales Bay, that's part of a marine sanctuary up there, has had to petition the marine sanctuary to change the language to allow, it's not invasive species, it's introduced species. All of the oysters that we farm are introduced species, and the language in the sanctuary didn't allow for that. So if that language wasn't changed, it would put all the oyster farmers up there out of business.
Gene, your point's really well taken. I think I started this endeavor. I don't think I understood, nor did my other committee members when they agreed to participate, the magnitude of information that's necessary to get any adequate understanding of what a sanctuary means in a particular area. We recognize, we have some sense for how big the elephant is now, and we realize that we're chewing on one toenail on one foot right now, but I think we're pretty committed and we'll keep chewing. So, which brings me back to concentrating on where would such information exist? And I don't mean so much statistically, as real life experience, which brings me back to the forums and inviting people who have the real life experience to say, this is the best thing since sliced bread, or this baby cost me my livelihood, or whatever it is. So Alan's part, he's been focusing on regulatory aspects. He's done a lot of work over the last month, and I think that for those who are interested in this topic, the best thing to do is to look at the Harbor Advisory Board agenda for this meeting and take a look at the committee's report, and most particularly the regulatory, quote, regulatory aspects, end quote, portion, because Alan starts laying some very important groundwork to understand how regulation work, or what powers of regulatory powers a sanctuary might have, irrespective of what it is. And he's done a nice job. He's got three pages here, so I would just invite people to, because he's not here, and I don't want to take the time to read it into the record. There's some really good foundational work here done by Alan.
It is on our agenda that the public can go in and view it. It was included in the packet.
So the last aspect, as far as the current report from the committee, has to do with local control. And as I said, the committee is defining local control as meaning local government, regional governments, agencies, industry groups, and actually NGOs as well, non-governmental agencies, organizations as well. So simply put, in this particular aspect, as with the other two aspects, economic and regulatory, the committee's in an information gathering mode. This is going to take a while. I hope the citizens and the city of Morro Bay will be patient with us. It's going to take us a few months to pull all this together, or I should say not all, because it's but to come up with some sort of meaningful information. And as it relates to that meaningful information, the committee, as I've said, feels very strongly that city and county governments, port and harbor authorities, regional agencies, business interests such as fishing, agriculture, real estate and commerce, and other non-governmental organizations who've lived with a marine sanctuary along the California coast be given an opportunity to share their experience with the city of Morro Bay and its citizens. For purposes of these public information forums, it makes no difference, at least to the committee, whether the experience were positive, negative, or neutral, as long as they're based on fact and do not stray off into advocacy or bias. The January 6, 2016 NOAA presentation in Morro Bay provided information and perspective from the viewpoint of the Office of National Marine Sanctuaries. That was important and valuable information. What is needed, additionally, are further public information forums featuring representatives from the entities and groups along the California coast who've lived with a sanctuary for a period of time. As I commented on earlier, the Morro Bay City Council policies and procedures provide two different tracks for an advisory body to provide input into the city council that it serves. And one of them, the one that we're most familiar with in this body, is we vote, and if it passes, we make a recommendation, it goes to staff, and staff moves it on up the hill. The other track, in cases of, and I think the wording is special consideration, the Harbor Advisory Board can make a direct request to council that an item be placed on a future council agenda. I just noticed in our packet tonight that track is also mentioned in this recently published, quote, advisory board work plan process, end quote, that the staff provided this evening. Yes, as Gene's making a circle, and that's exactly correct. Unless you're telling me to hurry up. So, okay, good. Now I know. I'll look for that one. So, tonight, I'll stop and see if there's any other questions, and then I have a motion, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any questions for Ron? Gene?
Have you been able to approach any other entities and have them respond back saying we'd like to meet you or we'd like to make a presentation?
Yes, we've identified, so far I have a list of over 30, and we're working our way down through them. It would be lovely to have some help. We're explaining to them, when the contact is made, this is who we are, this is why we're contacting you. It isn't about a particular sanctuary application. It's about the general concept of sanctuary, of living with one, and we would love to have the benefit of your experience, whatever that might be. And then we get into, well, the logistics of how that might happen. You know, can they provide us something in writing? Would they be willing to come here and talk to us? But that process has just begun. I mean, there have been half a dozen out of the presently identified 30 plus. There have been about a half a dozen contacts made.
Okay. Lynn? I have no comment. Neil?
No comment.
Dana?
No,
I'm good. Okay. Ron, you have a motion that you'd like to present to us?
Yes, please. I move that the Harbor Advisory Board make a direct written request to the Morro Bay City Council that city sponsorship and promotion of additional public information forums relative to a hypothetical marine sanctuary off the coast of Morro Bay be placed on the earliest possible City Council agenda. Further, that those forums be intended to provide objective, fact-based information to the city and its citizens, information provided by city and county governments, port and harbor authorities, regional agencies, business interests, and other non-governmental organizations which have lived for a period of time with a marine sanctuary on the California coast.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. I have a motion by Ron, a second by Gene. Do I have any discussion on this motion?
I think this is the first of such thing in my experience, and so if it passes, what I would propose, Mr. Chairman, is that the committee draft the request for your review.
Okay. All right, so hearing no discussion or any other... Oh, Dana, you have something.
Well, I just have one question. There's been times where, you know, we've had those meetings here, too. Is this something that we would do, or do you want to just... I mean, your motion is strictly to City Council at one of their meetings.
No.
This is...
Oh, okay, so it could be... they could ask us to do it. Or it would be up to them.
The motion says that the city, not the city council, that the city sponsor and promote additional public information forums, however that happens.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, hearing no other comment, all in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 All opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. So, Ron, if you could draft something, I can sign it, and then I can send it to you, Matt, and then that would be the direct conduit to get to the City Council. Okay? Thank you. Okay, so we've identified our business items, and now the declaration of future agenda items. One thing that I, you know, as we go back in here regarding City Council bringing something to us, and we actually discussed it, and we had a second for a future agenda item, which was the hunting that you brought to us last time, Matt. And I've noticed that the hunting now is off your goals and objectives in the city. Is that correct? You came to us last meeting regarding us taking some public forums or some interest in learning about the hunting. And I had a discussion that the goals and objectives for the city council now does not include the hunting regulations. Is that incorrect?
I'm not going to say that it's correct or incorrect, but I will say this, Eric, in terms of, I think, did you, when's, was it last week or a couple weeks ago that you had the question and answer with Fish and Game over hunting in the Back Bay?
We put together an informational session mainly for our rental and bay cruise boats, if that's the one you're referring to. That was more otter oriented.
Okay.
So we brought fish and game in and state parks to try and alleviate some of the issues we're having with otter interactions, but it wasn't Back Bay hunting related.
Okay.
This really came, I think, from previous council interest to potentially address this Back Bay hunting issue. There's some public comment that had been received. The Fish and Game Commission was getting ready to review upcoming regulations like they do every year, and the waterfowl track has a certain timeline which they do everything, and they'd received some public comment, and the council had expressed some interest in potentially having a topic agenda item just discussing the hunting issues in the Back Bay and potentially the city council taking a position on the hunting regulations. It's since worked its way onto the objectives list for 16-17. But due to various factors, mainly the large number of objectives on that list and all the other things going on that we're trying to accomplish, it was staff's recommendation that the city council not try to tackle that issue this year, and the council didn't insert it back onto the objectives.
So. That was my point. So where does that leave us as an advisory board? As something that I feel the citizens of Morro Bay are interested in learning the facts and figures. I've talked to a lot of people in the community, and they'd love to come to a forum about hunting and non-hunting. So I don't know if as you direct us to do certain things, this has been taken off your goals and your objectives for 2016-2017. Where does it lay us, and what should we do then? That's my real question.
If I could make a suggestion, as an advisory board, I mean, a lot of times it's what the concepts that you're bringing up also, but and vice versa. My suggestion is because to me the Back Bay hunting and fish and game situation, especially as it's connected with the birding interest in town, I think it's very vital that we get this together and have people understand the parameters. So I would be totally for the fish and game and the birding, the waterfowl birding world to come to the Harbor Advisory Board. Okay. And explain all of those issues, and especially in terms of the Back Bay, understanding the various boundaries that of state property and city property. And so there's a lot going on. I would totally be into having it come. I think the Harbor Advisory Board would be a perfect place for it to start.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. As they say, we do have it on it right now, and that's why I brought it up.
So are we looking for a presentation from Fish and Game to...
Well, we have that in our future agenda items, but I knew that was taken off of the goals and objectives of the city council, so I wanted to have our liaison explain to me what that means, and what he's done is given us the opportunity that we can have a public forum if we want to.
So two possible things to address with regard to the Back Bay hunting. One, I think the original council interest was in the regulations themselves. In terms of should the regulation cease to allow it, should they change it, pro-hunting, con-hunting. It was that argument. This sounds like we're also talking just an informational forum.
That's correct.
To let everybody know. So two different things going. So I guess we need to, if we want to declare a new agenda item, if you want to have like an informational forum to get all the parties and interests and stakeholders in and just for education's sake versus... pro-hunting, con-hunting? Do we want to have that discussion?
Well, I'm not so much, I don't think that our, I, at least I don't want to state pro or con. I mean, especially, I mean, I don't know if that's our issue here, really. I think we could. I mean, if we really want to, that's up to the board here. I was more interested in the educational aspect of it right now to understand it. And is there any opportunity? I think the one opportunity is to at least not have hunting here during our Winter Bird Festival when the birders are all here, at least for that 5 days, is to see if they can cease and desist. I think that was one of the comments, at least to certain people here.
So that speaks to the regulation side of it.
That's correct. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So it sounds like that maybe for a future agenda item, if we had a presentation, it's on our agenda, and the different parties can see that, then they can come make their comments, you know, before or after their presentation, depending on how it's laid out, the agenda one. But that would maybe cover a lot of the bases on what we're talking about.
Yeah. Okay. In our list of agenda items or future agenda items, that is on there. We only have 4 right now, so.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Ron.
The agenda item the future agenda item as it is stated right now is, quote, fish and wildlife hunting regulations in the Back Bay, end quote. So we seem to be talking about something a little different. So I'd like to propose another future agenda item, and that is a public information forum relative to the use of the Back Bay to include such uses as hunting, birding, boating, and other.
I'll second that.
So now that we discussion?
Any discussion?
This is like an informational form at our normal meeting, right? This is
yes,
a special meeting.
That's correct.
Right.
Yeah.
And my thinking is, it's up to the board, but my thinking is that the Harbor Advisory Board would invite Fish and Game, would invite some birding organization, would invite some boating organization, perhaps the yacht club, or some kayaking organization, or whatever. Whoever the interested parties are.
Black Brant.
Sure, the Black Brant. Sure, the Black Brant group, and they would. And what I'm thinking is that they would be encouraged to talk about when they use the bay, and how they use the bay, and out of that might just come what Bill is targeted on, which is, okay, so maybe the child needs to get divided calendar-wise in the Back Bay. And I think that the point about that the city doesn't control all of the Back Bay is a really good point to be brought out as well. So but if we invite Fish and Game, then I think, and maybe have them do a little mapping for us, that would become self-evident.
I think it's a tremendous asset to the community. I mean, I think people would be surprised or is surprised of the majority. I mean, I don't know about the majority. A lot of people don't even know we allow hunting in the Back Bay, believe it or not. You actually know one person, Greg Kaufman, that plays soccer with you. He's lived here. He's a banker. He didn't have any idea. So, now I'm not... Yeah, Neil.
So I have an oyster farm in the Back Bay, and I've known about hunting for a long time. Yeah. And I know a lot of hunters, and so there's a lot of people who do. It's been a family tradition for decades.
Right, right. So I think that it's something that the public would like to hear about, and I think it would be informative to have some knowledge and see where it comes out of. So I'd like to have a motion to... We have a motion, but I'd like to... I seconded the motion. Any more discussion? None. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Thank you for... Okay, so is there any other future agenda items that anyone would like to discuss? Ron?
That we place on perhaps the very next agenda the question of mortgage relief for resident crab fishermen.
I'll second that. Any discussion? So we have a first and second. Ron and myself is seconded it. Bill LaFay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Good point, Ron. Okay, anything else? All right, hearing none. Do we have anything on the March agenda, Eric, that you would like to discuss with us, or you have any thoughts, any pertinent things coming up?
Nope, nothing that I need to throw on there right now.
Well, you will provide us with a staff report from the February 9th budget on those two revenue streams for the Back Bay, right?
Revenue streams,
you know, the $40 million extra dollars for the...
Oh, for...
Yeah.
So, yeah, for... In status report, assuming the president comes out with his budget on time and Corps of Engineers has a work plan, yeah, we'll make sure we include that in the status report. We'll also have a status update on what the council does with the agenda, or with the budget, mid-year budget adjustment, whether we'll be further along in our regular budget adjustment at that point, regular budget creation for the next year, yet to be seen. We may have something there, and we'll keep engaging the ad hoc committee.
Did you email your contact in Alameda?
Yes.
Yeah. So there's really nothing to discuss there either? Okay.
Not yet.
Okay. So hearing no more, do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Dana? Lynn seconds it. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.